Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, a Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by awesome Patreon backers like the bodacious Bert Miller, the mysterious Michael Beck Esperum, and the genuine GM Gerrymander. Today we have myself, Ange, along with Josh and Carl, a random GM we found alongside the road. We are going to talk about what we need to feel confident when we run the first session of a new campaign. In all seriousness, Carl, thank you for joining us. We didn't actually find you on the side of the road. And our listeners know me and Josh, but would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Ange. Hi, everyone. My name is Carl. I know Ange through a group of mutual friends called Matinee Adventures, who runs games at Origins and several other conventions. I typically will run games there. I run a lot of home games. I've been running games for, good God, most of my adult and some of my non-adult life.
Yeah, we don't need to share the years. That just makes everybody feel old.
I've been recently running some games and participating a lot over in Symphony Entertainment, which is a horror-focused, mostly one-shots and short-burn games. I basically try and run as many different systems as I possibly can, and I'm kind of a ringer because I will always jump on a line and talk incessantly about my favorite thing in the world.
So before we dive into our main topic, we're going to ask our Get to Know a Gnome plus Carl question. So tell us about a time you were completely unprepared for a game, but you still ran it anyway. Josh, go.
Oh, geez. Okay.
See, you were unprepared.
I was unprepared. I was very unprepared. I ran a Battlestar Galactica game back when the series was still kind of fresh. I had been working a lot that week, and I kind of forgotten that we were having people over to play the game until like 2 hours before they were coming over. So I literally wrote down like four things on a piece of scratch paper that they were completely disconnected. I think it was like an NPC name, like some sort of situation, and then maybe two other words that I don't even remember what they were at this point, but they were nonsense. But it was too late to cancel, and I didn't want to admit that I wasn't prepared. So everybody showed up. There were five people in that game, not counting me, so it was a big party. And I kind of just vamped the whole time. I was like, okay, so you know, the Cylons have attacked and you're all kind of stranded on this planet. What are you doing? How are you feeling? What's going on inside your head over here, friend? And I just gave them all like character spotlight moments and let them like go into like the minutiae of their day and their interactions with NPCs. And I let them write the whole session, but I don't think they noticed.
What about you, Carl?
So I've had a couple of formative experiences like this, but I'm going to go back all the way back to college for this one. I was unprepared for actually a D&D game because I prepared for a normal game. And what I didn't realize was I had basically been dragooned into becoming the GM for an existing group that was already there on campus, but their GM had recently left. This was when I transferred into the second school that I went to. That group had 13 people.
Oh my God.
13?
Those were the days.
You may recognize that is literally two RPG groups if two people had stepped up and actually run a game, but no one did. It was less that I wasn't ready for the first game session and more that I was completely unprepared for managing 13 20-year-olds trying to play D&D at the same time. The nice thing I found is that you can drastically underprep for that because you're just going to kill time literally just by existing. So, and actually, weirdly, ever since then, I have made a point to try and be overprepared, especially for like a session zero or a first session. So I have thankfully not been caught by surprise very often. The first couple times I ran a con game, I was surprised. I think the first one I went to, I was pretty underprepared for that just because I didn't realize just how much you're on the hook. If you don't have a table that is willing to lean into the scenario, they still expect to be entertained. You still got to drag them through the 3-4 hour slot.
Oh, God, I have stories. That would take us off track, but I have stories.
You can't see it, but on the Zoom, we're all, like, staring off into the middle distance right now.
Yeah, we've all got that thousand-yard stare going on. What about you, Ange? When was the time that you were unprepared but ran anyway?
I want to say this was probably about 2013. I had started hearing rumblings of Powered by the Apocalypse games. I think I had played maybe a session of Dungeon World, maybe not, but Monster of the Week crossed my path. And I was like, oh, this is my jam. This is my thing. And so I put it on the schedule for a convention. And didn't really prep the way I should have. Like, I had all the materials. I had all the playbooks printed out. I had my cheat sheet and stuff like that in front of me. But I didn't really understand how the system worked. And I had no plot going into this. I just put some random title. Usually my random title for Monster of the Week, if I don't know what I'm going to be doing, is something wicked, you know, out of Something Wicked This Way Comes, or something ridiculous like that. Thankfully, of the three players I got in that game, two of them were friends, and the other guy was a great sport. They came up with, my one friend was playing the Monstress, who was a fey monster child with a history kind of like Hellboy. My buddy was playing a priest who was her guardian. And then the third guy was playing the professional, who was basically a monitor for monster kind who was attached to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, because that was the only place the government could think to put them. I had no idea about the mechanics of this system, but they gave me great material in making their characters, and just, we rolled with it. We had a great time. My buddy that was with us had a little bit more familiarity with the system, so we were able to figure things out without too much pain. But yeah, that was probably the prime example of me stepping in to run something without having any plan whatsoever. I mean, generally, if I'm bringing a Powered by the Apocalypse game to the table, I don't have a plan. I just have the playbooks, and I'm going to see what the players give me. I'll usually make them tell me what the framework is, you know, why are their characters connected? But for the most part, I still go in very little prepared.
But still, if that was the first time that you'd run Powered by the Apocalypse, then, woof, jeez.
Yeah. Thankfully, it was a small con, and, you know, it was a little forgiving.
That's good.
So moving on into our main topic, I have been getting ready to run a couple of new campaigns. So I thought we could talk about what we all individually need to feel confident when we run that first session of a new campaign. This is one of those things that sharing advice can be really helpful to everyone looking to run their own games. But it's also going to be something that's very personal for each of us. I don't think there is a single universal, this is what you need to prep to feel confident. It's like it's going to be different for all of us. So I figured we could have a conversation. So Josh, I'm going to put you in the hot seat first. What is it you feel you need to be confident when you run that first game of a campaign?
So when we talk about first game, I'm assuming that we've already done a session zero.
I mean, hopefully.
Yeah. I'm not counting that, because that's zero. It's in the name, right? So like first time we're going to sit down and like do a thing with the characters. One of the things that I like, the very first thing I need is like a strong pitch for the campaign, which I've theoretically already come up with, because we've already made characters, we've already done the session zero, but I need that in front of me to like remember like what the purpose of the campaign is. Kind of like the Dusk Jacket copy, if the campaign were a book in a bookstore, right? And along with that, I need a strong log line. And for those that don't know the lingo, like a log line is basically your elevator pitch, your one sentence summation of the whole story. And it's usually use pop culture references to make it. And it's usually like in a format of A plus B equals C, where C is the campaign. a lighthearted Knights Black Agent game. You might say it's Brooklyn Nine-Nine meets Gothic horror.
I kind of want to play that.
I was coming up with these examples for the podcast, and I want to play all of these campaigns. So like an over-the-top high fantasy game with some like lit RPG elements to it might be like Persona 5 meets Lord of the Rings. or a game I desperately want to play in at some point in my life. Something that mixes kaiju with kind-hearted gentleman thieves could be Monarch meets Robin Hood.
Oh, nice.
If I've got that A plus B equals C, like I know the whole vibe of the game and I'm ready to like make up stuff in that setting. And then so that's like my end of things. And then on the player's end of things, I need to know where their characters are starting mentally. So I kind of like need to know like what their thing is. If it's, you know, Powered by the Apocalypse game, that makes it easy with the playbook. If it's something like a D20 system, I tend to steal the one unique thing from 13th Age.
Oh, that's a good one.
I love that. Yeah, I love that ruling.
I don't actually know that one very well. You guys explain it to me?
In 13th Age, every character has one unique thing about them. And they are the only person in the entire setting that is that thing. So it could be something as simple as like, I am the best baker in all the land. Or it could be, I am the first Knights Radiant.
Yeah.
And then you have to figure out what that means. Brandon Sanderson already wrote a whole bunch of books about what Knights Radiants are, but that was the first
thing. You and I just became friends. You don't have a choice in the matter. But yeah, I think my favorite example is the example they give in the book is, I think it's something like, you're the only halfling acrobat in the circus of hell.
Yes. Yes. So I want all of my characters, or all of the player characters, to have a thing. And that might not be that dramatic, but I just want to know what that thing is so that I know what I'm working with. And along the same lines, like what their goals are. I like my characters to have short-term goals, mid-term goals, and long-term goals. So if I need to come up with something on the fly, I know what I'm working with that will interest them. And then like maybe a couple NPCs that are connected to them. If I've got those two things, I'm usually ready to like GM on the edge of my seat. But if I want to be a little bit more comfortable, then I usually try to figure out what the hook of the first adventure is going to be. And for a session one hook, I try to be pretty heavy handed with it. Like, here is a big yellow exclamation point over the quest giver who will give you your mission. Let's roll with it. And then if I want to get even more into it, then I'll create some factions for the world. I start out small. I try to start out small, and I started to just start out with three factions. One the players can be aligned with, one that they can be aligned against, so like rivals or villains or something like that. And then like either a wild card or a neutral faction, or maybe like a faction that's threatened in some way that they can come to the defense of. I think that triangle of faction influence makes good politicking. And then I sprinkle in like at least one NPC for each faction. I don't need to know every single like individual that runs like all the way from the bursar up to the president of the organization or whatever. I just need like one NPC with like a quirk or a personality trait or something like that. I don't even bother really with like backgrounds for my NPCs until they hit the table and see how they interact with the characters.
Yeah, sometimes the background quirk personality of an NPC comes out the moment they hit the table and people start interacting with them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I also like to keep it a little loose so that I can custom tailor them to the PCs. Because even if I know like the entire PC background, right? Like as soon as you start playing the character, things are going to change. You're going to make different decisions. You're going to decide that, oh, they're not gruff and, you know, a loner. They're actually really friendly and like a grandfatherly figure, right? I try not to plan too much in terms of NPC history and motivation and whatnot until like see what's going to work with the players and who they're going to be interested in interacting with. And that's when I start to mentally add in background details.
I think some of that is like, we give players the advice, like come up with an, you know, a rough background, but don't write a book.
Right.
Don't write, you know, multiple pages of a backstory, because you want to have room to adjust as you get into play. And the same advice actually works for GMs when we're setting up the NPCs and the various things in our world that we want to have some flexibility with once we see how things are going to work at the table.
It's like the quantum NPC history, right? Like it's in one state, it's in another. You don't know until you open up the box and find out if the NPC is alive or a lich. The last bit is optional depending on the system that I'm running. If I'm running a brand new to me system, or if I'm running like a really crunchy system, then I need cheat sheets for the system.
Oh yeah.
I've even started creating cheat sheets for like creature encounters in the Pathfinder 2E game that I run. Like currently my characters are real high level, so this is very far away from session one. Yeah, I don't know if you've looked at a stat block for a monster in Pathfinder first edition or second edition, but they're complicated.
I haven't run Pathfinder since first edition. There's a reason we switched to 5e.
But the thing I've been doing with those stat blocks is I've just been making myself little, like, if at full health first action open with this, once, you know, at half health, do this. If wizard is exposed, do this. So I kind of like program the monster actions, which takes a lot of the cognitive load off of my shoulders when I'm in the midst of running the encounter. So little things like that. If I know I'm planning a trap or something like that, I want to like,
that's actually a really good idea.
Yeah. So that's what I need. That's what I need to feel comfortable when I'm running my first session.
What about you, Carl? What do you need for that first session of a campaign?
So I have a couple of different things. Some of it dovetails with what Joss just said, but a lot, I think it that's actually kind of cool. My stuff is very different for the most part. I think I've been sort of affected by the groups I normally run for. Particularly that bit about, you know, what's the emotional state of your character? I never have any idea, and I will never run for my normal group and get an answer in that regard on session one. So I've kind of adapted my style to that. So I start with some logistical things. The first thing I start with is, how long do I want to run the game for? I, like a lot of different people, suffer from really serious gamer ADHD. I am frequently planning.
No.
Quiet. Just.
I'm looking at Lieutenant Morales.
You're supposed to pretend like I'm not running a game for you every now and again. But no, so like I'm frequently planning the next game halfway through the first one. So I need to know roughly how I'm going to run it for. Partly because I can burn out very easily doing the same thing over and over again. But once I have an idea of, you know, okay, I'm going to run this game for 4 to 6 months. Cool. You know, it doesn't need to be anything particularly complicated. Before I do the first session, I come up with what the final encounter is going to be. Not the logistics of it, but just the, you know, the elevator pitch for it. I'm starting a game called Fabula Ultima soon. And, you know, it's a Final Fantasy tabletop game functionally. So if I were going to do a very standard thing, is the player characters fight God is the last scene. But I frequently start with the final encounter, because I find that when I have both an idea of how long a game should be and what I'm driving it towards, I can keep dropping hints for what that's going to be, making things interesting, tying things together. And I learned that from running Knights Black Agents, that Conspiramid and a lot of the, how mm-hmm. everything is tied together in that structure was great for me.
The Conspiramid is glorious.
It really is.
I love that it starts off as Dracula, ?? like you know that the end game is I'm gonna fight Dracula, but you know, all the steps in between are largely up to the player characters. So yeah, so I start with the end of the game, and then I try and hit the emotional beats at the start, the middle, and the end of the campaign. So I'm going to try and make them feel irritated at the beginning and hopeless at the middle and triumphant at the end. I don't consider it a failure if I don't hit that specific thing. But as long as I make them feel something, whatever I'm driving them towards is I find helpful to just kind of keep in mind the emotion that I'm shooting for.
And I think having that end goal in mind also helps, because a lot of campaigns end up fizzling out because we end up taking too long to get certain places and we don't know how to pace on a larger scale for a campaign.
And after having several games fizzle out, my rule of thumb for a long time has been a story isn't a story until it's complete. So at the very least, even if I'm not getting all the way to the end game, I want to drive the game to a point where we can confidently step away from it saying, okay, we told a story. If we there was more here to tell, but if we never come back, that's okay. That I need proximate knowledge of the rules. I need to know enough about the rules to be confidently wrong about them. And for me, that starts with character creation. I try and approach every new system from the lens of I'm a player first and a GM second. So what is the first and most common things that my players are going to run into when they're trying to understand the rules? So I find that to be helpful. I also have a secret weapon in that one of my players is the definition of a true neutral rules lawyer. He is just, oh no, the rules are this. And I can go, okay, that's cool, but I'm going to ignore that for narrative purposes. And he'll go, neat.
those players are like gold.
I married one of those.
Good job.
Yeah.
Good job. And so after that, I just need a strong opening scene and initial direction. I kind of think it's a little bit the player's responsibility to, like, we need to give them a strong start, but it's kind of their responsibility to grab onto it. Yeah, it might be hackneyed, mm-hmm. It might be hokey to start with, but that Fabula Ultima game I'm starting, they are all waking up in a cave with amnesia. Go! There are weird bat things around, and there's some skeletons guarding a gate. Figure it out.
That's kind of like what I said about being heavy-handed with the first session, yeah. In terms of like giant exclamation mm-hmm. point over the quest giver. Because like, if it's new to everybody, like whether it's a new system or new players at the table, or it's even if it's just, you know, the new campaign, you need some solid footing to stand on. And like those mm-hmm. tropes and those cliches, they give us that ground that we can stand on and then build something cooler.
And cliches yeah. can be hokey, but they can also be really fun if you land them. So if everybody's in on the joke, it can be really fun.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, too, is like, you know, people are like, oh, cliches are bad, or being too obvious with your tropes is bad. It's like, I can tell you from personal experience, both as a GM and as a player, if a GM tries to get too clever or unique with their stuff, it can misfire so badly, either yeah. because players aren't picking up on what you're trying to put down, or you're not picking up on what the GM put down because it's just so off kilter or quirky or unique, or just it's the tropes are fine. The tropes are fine. The players' interaction will help make them unique.
I had a very similar experience to that. And back in college, a friend of mine was running Legend of the Five Rings because he loved it. And he ran what I now realize, having now read more and run Legend of the Five Rings, was a great L5R plot. But I had no idea what was going on, because I was like, haha, I am a samurai. And he's like, we're talking about like 37 levels of hidden political intrigue in here. And I'm like, I have a sword. Like, that's the level that I was in the world at. And it's like, I have a sword. Occasionally people bow to me. This is neat. It was really well set up, but it was so dense. It was just like unapproachable.
I mean, like there's a yeah. reason why the romance genre of literature is like the best selling genre in all of publishing. And like they market based on the tropes yeah. that you're going to find in the story. Like their mm-hmm. whole, the whole thing is like, you know what you're getting into when you pick up this book.
Yeah.
And
oh yeah,
Like, same thing with like police procedurals and TV shows. Yeah.
What I need for my games is I need the framework. I need what is the it's kind of like what you were saying with the elevator pitch. I need to know what the starting point is for these characters and what the framework is going to be. For example, the Eberron campaign I ran many years ago, I told the players, you can be anyone from Eberron, but you chose to fight for this mercenary company, which served Braylon during the last war, and you have agreed to meet up in Sharn 5 years after you first met. Actually, it would have been 2 years after the end of the war. You've agreed to meet up in Sharn to celebrate the 5th anniversary of a big battle you took part in. Whatever you want to make, it still needs to fit those parameters. That way I know what my starting point is for the campaign. And generally speaking, this is the way I have always run things. I'm currently starting up a superheroes campaign using Savage Worlds. And what I told the players is the world doesn't have public superheroes, but there's a little bit more on the, oh crap, what's the word for like Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster?
Cryptids.
Yeah, there's a little bit more about cryptids around on social media. There's a little bit hint that more is going on out there, but nothing obvious, nothing public. You are all normal people living normal lives between the ages of 18 and 29. Go, tell me who your characters are. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, don't worry about powers. I actually did a survey to find out kind of what a couple of different options of powers they would like. But the whole thing is they are going to wake up in this episode is going out after I run the first session, so I can say all of this. They're all going to wake up in a laboratory with superpowers, and none of them are going to know each other, but there they are all together now with superheroes, and go, you need to escape. I have my starting point with that. So I guess that's my framework and my opening scenario. I also need to know who the PCs are. This is why session zero is important for me, because I need the players to tell me who they want to play, because as awesome as I think my ideas are just, they're no good to me unless I make them work for the players. And so I always tailor everything to the characters the players give me. And if the characters are starting, you know, in a normal type of, you know, like it's a D&D thing where we're going to go on an adventure together, I need hooks. I need relationships. I need the players to tell me their connections to each other, because I want to have established at the beginning of the campaign why those characters are working together. Or if I'm not doing that, like I am with this current Supers game, I need a good hook on why they are going to work together. And of course, the group of players I'm going to be running with, I trust them all to lean into this and be fine. You know, nobody's going to suddenly decide they want to be the lone wolf and hate on somebody. So I know it's going to work with this group.
That makes sense.
I also need a general plan for things. It's maybe not quite as thorough as what you were saying, Carl, where you know where you want to end up. I have some ideas of where I would like to go, but I need to know who the movers and shakers in the background are. You know, like what is happening beyond the players that's going to influence what they get involved in. I don't need big details, but I need to have some idea on what's going on. And generally speaking, I need that first scenario planned relatively well. You know, I need to know where I'm starting. I need to know who the NPCs are that they're going to be interacting with. You know, maybe not fully detailed backgrounds, but a little bit of personality, what they look like, what their involvement in the situation is going to be. That way I have a good starting point for where they end up taking things, if that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, very much so.
I have a question that's going a little off book, but I'm curious, like, how long did it take you to figure out what you needed, and how did you figure out what you needed for your session ones outside of just like failing at it for a number of years.
But I mean, I was going to say, part of the reason I came up with that framework for that Eberron campaign is I was coming off of a second failed Supers campaign where I didn't plan enough for what the game was going to be. And so when it started spiraling out of control, the players were having a fantastic time. They still give me grief about abandoning that campaign because they were having a blast, but I was panicking and trying to find a hole to hide in because they had moved far beyond anything I had expected. And at that point in time, I'm like, I need, if I'm going to be a GM, if I'm going to continue to run games, I need to have a better handle on this because I want to be the type of GM who can run a campaign satisfyingly for both myself and my players.
That's really interesting because I'm the kind of GM that I will latch on to what the players are having fun with. And I find that like if I try to overplan too much, then I'm forcing them into stuff that I think will be cool, but then they kind of like bounce off of. So like some of the best sessions I've run have been where I've had less prep in terms of what I think is going to happen until it runs up in it, like in those rules heavy systems. Like I said, during my prep, like if I run into something that requires a lot of mechanics, then that's not pretty, but it took a lot of trial and error and like self-reflection too, like stepping back and like thinking, okay, why didn't this work? Like you said you were doing, Ange, like you step back and you figured out why you weren't enjoying running that. And then you worked to fix that with your next one. I think that's a really important thing to.
It's not that I'm not responsive to the players. I was actually talking about this with a friend because I was looking at something I'm going to be giving a link to in the end of the show, the 6 styles of play. And I was reading about, I've always considered myself a trad GM. And I was reading it, and the way they were describing the trad GM was more, it's all about the GM's control. It's all about the GM's vision. It's all about the GM's story. And I'm like, I tend to run more trad, but I'm still, if I'm not enjoying the characters that the players are playing, it doesn't matter to me. It's not about my vision. It's about their story. So I think for me, it's a matter of having enough planned or prepped that I'm not feeling like I'm completely making everything up on the fly, at least with normal traditional campaign. I need to have an idea of what's going on in the larger scheme of things so that when the players do something unexpected, I know how to respond to it rather than sitting there looking at them with a panicked expression on my face, not knowing how to respond, because that happened a lot when I was a new GM.
That's fair. For me, I think the one thing I tried to learn is I try and learn something new every campaign I run. Just either a new tip or a trick or some way to set up those guidelines, because coming up with those frameworks can do so much of the heavy lifting for you to start. We, like for the Fabula Ultima game, we're literally going with the idea that this is an abandoned save that someone stopped playing.
Oh, that's so cool.
So like there's framework questions, and one of them I threw out there was, okay, which one of you was the main player character's love interest? Like, who was going to be the companion character? But like I learned that through pretty hard lessons, because I ran a couple of Hero System games back in the day, and the only one that was moderately successful was the one that I gave a very strict and rigid framework to. That's kind of a unique problem with the Hero System and like other highly generic systems, but like that more than anything else taught me that you need to be very, like, the frameworks aren't evil. Like telling people, no, you can't play a 6-armed transdimensional transdimensional baker, this is a Cowboys game. Like, like we're playing in the Old West, and it's not Weird West. It's just you're a couple of lawmen in a town.
I look at it as the framework is me setting up the general gist of the story I want to explore as a GM, and then it gets fully formed once the players make their characters, but I need the characters to fit within that framework. Almost every campaign I have run where I have not given it a framework has had problems. Dragon Heist.
Oh, nice.
I ran the Dragon Heist adventure path thing. Not an adventure path, but Dragon Heist as a campaign for some friends. And I had set up a little bit of a framework, but I didn't set up connections between their characters or anything like that. And my biggest gripe with that campaign was that there was no logical reason in hell that those characters would continue to work together. Like, they constantly bickered, they constantly made fun of each other, and like, the players were having fun, but I'm just like, I don't like any kind of PvP, and the fact that their characters couldn't even get along enough to like not mince at each other the whole, you know, the whole thing long. It's like, by the time we got to the end of it, but I was like, I'm done. Let's do something else. And years ago, I tried to run a Firefly campaign where I tried to make the players do connections with their characters so they were a bonded group, and that failed miserably. Like, I didn't know enough about how to push it and make them actually forge meaningful connections, because almost all of the connections they created were extremely superficial, and it ended up falling apart when a couple of the players started butting heads over in-character stuff that I just didn't know how to handle at the time. That was more than just my GMing issues. It was other stuff going on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've all had that experience of putting together a group that on paper, like, this is going to be a great group. Everything's going to be fine. And it implodes in session 3 for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said, Carl, you learn something from everything you run. Yeah. And those were important lessons for us to learn. And they've made us better GMs. Yeah. Hopefully.
We should probably start wrapping up. Any last thoughts or words on, you know, advice for people looking to feel comfortable running their own first session of a campaign?
Just try it. You're never going to know until you actually try it. There's all sorts of different things you can do. There's no end to advice out there on the internet. But until you start developing your own personal style, like I said, grab stuff from a friend, grab stuff from a blog post you read, figure out your own style. It happens faster than you might think.
I would say know what makes you nervous. Like, if you find yourself getting nervous about a session, take a step back and think about why. Is it because you're nervous about the combat potential because you don't have a firm grasp on the combat rules? That's usually what makes me the most nervous. Or, you know, are you nervous about them like running into an NPC that you don't have anything prepped for, in which case you know that you should prep, you know, stats and backgrounds and names and stuff for NPCs. So if you know what makes you nervous, you'll know what you can focus your prep on, and you can let the other stuff kind of fade into the background because you're confident with like the timeline of the world's history or things like that.
What if you're nervous about disappointing your players because you love them all and you respect them all, and this is going to be your first time running for them?
Well,
because that's a, yeah.
Then you need to remember that they are there because they are there to have fun with their friends, and that you are their friend and they love you as much as you love them.
This goes to the episode we had last time, which is about imposter syndrome. So, you know, there you go. My last bit of advice is don't hesitate to get yourself a mentor. If you are a gamer, you probably have friends who run games. Reach out to somebody who's not in the campaign you're going to run and use them as a sounding board. That can really help a lot. So this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, so our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Thacko with Advantage. Ange and Jared love talking about RPGs and D&D. Together, they share insights into the games they're running in the campaign journal, and then tackle a variety of topics that affect the game in the DM's workshop. Maybe you'll even pick up an ancient D&D factoid about a previous edition of the game that you'll never use.
You can find all of us, well, you can find me and Josh at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Meta. Carl, where can you be found on the internet?
So for the most part, I can be found haunting the Symphony Entertainment Discord. I am going to throw a couple links into the show notes. I recently ran a couple of games there that I'm very proud of. If you're into actual plays, I ran a three-shot Aliens game, as well as a really fun little game called Lovecraft is Dead, which is basically all of the different disparate personalities of a private eye in the 20s, making him make very bad decisions. It was a lot of fun. But otherwise, yeah, I am just kind of hanging around and on the Symphony Discord. But if horror games or one-shots are your thing, feel free to check us out.
We'll have those links in our show notes. Is there anything anybody else wants to give a shout-out to today?
Oh my god, I am halfway through an amazing young adult novel called To Shape a Dragon's Breath by Moniquil Black Goose. This author has taken, like, the entire magic school genre and, like, at once deconstructed it and reconstructed it into something completely new, and I can't stop telling people about it. So go read that. It's got dragons and alchemy and social injustice, and it's amazing. There is another book called The Game Master's Handbook of Proactive Role-Playing by Johan and Tristan Fischel. I probably did not pronounce any of their names correctly. Well, maybe Tristan. But that book is where I got a lot of, like, my learning character motivations stuff from. So in terms of, like, prepping for your first session, highly recommend.
Awesome. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm going to share a link to the Six Cultures of Play article, along with a YouTube video that kind of breaks it down and talks about it. Someone on a Discord I'm on recently shared this. And I don't necessarily agree with everything they described. They did say that these are not hard and fast rules. So there is wiggle room in these concepts. And no person generally sticks with just one style of play. We tend to mix and match to our own tastes. But it is an interesting look at how we play our beloved RPGs and kind of what the current culture climate is. Are we all confident enough about avoiding getting thrown in the stew this week?
I'd hope so. I think I'm way too gamey for a stew.
As long as I've got my log line and my cheat sheets, I think I'm prepared not to be part of the stew.